the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, you're very welcome back. It is Willow Callan sitting in for Matt Cooper on The Last Word. We're going to talk to Dr. Niamh Lynch now. You probably know Niamh from online, most likely Instagram, where she's Dr. Niamh_Lynch, or on TikTok, where she's the TikTok Kitty Doc. But Niamh, you also have your first book, which has come out, which is in my hand, which is Should I Be Worried? A No Panic Guide to Your Child's Health. I would guess that that question, should I be worried, comes into many, many parents' heads many, many times a day when they've got a new child.
You have no idea. And I had no idea either until I had kids, because I felt like pre-kids, I spent a lot of time reassuring parents and using my knowledge in pediatrics to reassure parents. And then once I had my own kids, I had to use that knowledge to reassure myself. Sometimes knowing a little bit too much can be a dangerous thing as well, obviously, because you start to worry even more. But what I've tried to do in this book is lay it out really in a really clear, accessible way, kind of straightforward language, so parents can pick it up and have a look at a certain set of symptoms or whatever that's concerning them and say, okay, yeah, I don't need to be worried.
Because I was intrigued as to what effect that was going to have on you as a mum too, because understandably, you've done all the research, you've studied for years, you've had the practical experience of being in front of kids coming into hospitals, and at the same time, this party going, am I maybe over-diagnosing my own kids? Am I getting over-concerned about my own kids? Was that a difficult balance to find?
Do you know, there's a kind of a mythology out there that it's a dangerous thing to be the child of a doctor or a nurse, because we tend to dismiss their symptoms a lot. Certainly my older child, and she won't mind me saying it, she was often complaining of tummy pain. Her appetite wasn't great. She didn't grow particularly well. And I was just like, you'll be grand, you'll be grand. By the time she was 11, she was way smaller than everyone in her class. And she got a blood test done and it showed she had celiac disease. So, you know, I maybe should have been a bit more worried at that stage. But that's one of the hazards. We do, I think, tend to maybe minimise our own children's symptoms a little bit whilst taking everybody else's children's symptoms very seriously. So it's not an easy station being the child of a doctor or a nurse.
They have to work a bit harder to get a day off.
They do. They have to try and get our attention. Yeah.
A piece of advice I always got was never lie to your lawyer or to your doctor. And in this case, it's your kids trying to lie to the parents, where it might be a little bit easier. You go, oh, my tummy is a little bit sore. Maybe I don't need to go in today. And you're going to give them the full inquiry. So that makes it a little bit more difficult for them. If I asked about the online side of things before it came to actually putting the book together, I mean, do you get enjoyment from it or do you find it difficult? Because you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who are viewing your material. You get loads. I was looking at your accounts earlier on. You get loads of views, but then you get kind of, you can get the bizarre comments. You can get the kind of, I guess, anti-medicine comments that sometimes come underneath posts as well. Do you get an enjoyment from that medium and actually engaging with people that way?
I have to be honest and say, it's not a pleasurable thing to do. The way I see it is, I don't volunteer in my community. I don't volunteer with Simon or St. Vincent de Paul or anything like that. To me, this is like a form of volunteerism. It's like a community service that I do in my spare time as often as I can. And certain things people will find useful. Certain pieces of information people can find quite confronting, because maybe they did it a certain way when their babies were young and now they're realising that the current advice is you don't do it that way. And then they maybe get a little bit angry or resentful when they hear that the current practice is not to do something. For example, you know, those baby nests. Yeah. They're like these soft little things that you put babies in. And they used to be advertised as sleep nests for babies to be put to sleep in. And now we realise that that's not actually a safe sleep environment for them. So the advice is don't use them as, you know, for sleep. And then inevitably you'll get comments saying, well, I used it for my baby for sleep and they're grand. And that's called survivor's bias. You know, just because it was okay for you doesn't mean it's okay for everybody. But that comes out then in the comments. And then, you know, some people can get, there can be a bit of argy-bargy in the comments then, you know. And when that starts happening, I just turn off the comments, because it's not meant to be that kind of a space. You know, people are very, very black and white online. There isn't a lot of room for nuance, and people fight. You know, they fight with each other in the comments and they get very invested in these arguments with strangers. So I turn off the comments when that starts to happen.
I think, you know what, you're probably as well off to do that, because you're trying to provide information and a service to people who may well have an issue, and then they go and search for it, or they go to your page to see if you've commented about it before. And then what will happen is you get people who will challenge anyway. And then you get people who, I think, as you mentioned, the book one with Dr. Google, where people will go online to try and maybe even confirm their own biases about something, or will just go to try and find a reason, maybe not even to go to the doctor. And then they're going to go and challenge you. I think one you'd even mentioned was, again, on that kind of confirmation bias from them, was this idea of popcorn for under fives is probably not a good idea, or shards of ice because it could be a choking hazard. And people turn around to you and the comment is naturally, well, I always gave my kids them and they were fine.
Yeah. And it's very hard to take people away from that belief. But what you're hoping is that that information is going to reach people who will benefit from it, and that you'll prevent a child from actually having an accident with popcorn or ice down the line, that some parents will take it on board and say, you know what, I remember seeing somewhere online that I shouldn't give my child popcorn or I shouldn't give them a chunk of ice. And that's really the aim. And anyone who comes into the comments and says, well, actually, I was fine, you know, I was eating popcorn before I had teeth, you know, that doesn't really cut the mustard. And that's not why I'm sharing. I'm not sharing to get into arguments with people whose minds aren't going to be changed.
Yeah. One that I found very interesting reading through was how you always need to be kind of teachable and listening along the way. And that was the story about the nurse who spotted the young child with diabetes that you had, I won't say passed over, but maybe hadn't noticed because you were trying to treat their symptoms and you just overlooked it entirely. But yet the nurse was able to give you a nudge in the right direction.
Yeah. It's very important. You know, when you start learning your trade in medicine, you have to be open to the fact that you might be book smart, but that doesn't translate always into the real world. So you learn a list of things that are symptoms, but you don't necessarily step back and look at the big picture. And that nurse was in the background, sort of looking over my shoulder, keeping an eye on me, because I was very green. That was my first pediatric job, and she'd seen it all before. And you just have to be open to being taught by all of the amazing teachers that are around you in a hospital. That's everybody from the parents and the kids themselves to the nurses, to your fellow doctors, to, you know, the people, the domestic staff. Everybody has something to add and something to teach you in a hospital.
And partly, I guess that's part of the book. And you're trying to have an approach which kind of makes it approachable for people to go and actually get medical care. Because I think one of the biggest issues are so many people who maybe go the opposite to this, should I be worried, as I've outlined at the start, where they think, oh, I got to go straight to the hospital, I got to go straight to the GP. In fact, there's probably plenty of people who don't go when they probably should.
That's true as well. It's rare in pediatrics, though. I think as adults, we tend to minimise our own symptoms, but we would seldom ignore symptoms in a child. Generally, it's a parent's instinct to say, okay, I should probably get this checked out. And a challenge or a problem that parents can find is if they're bringing a child with a concern to a very busy GP surgery, there's not a lot of time to spend with the doctor. You know, do you really feel like you've been heard? And the book allows you to have a list of red flags so you can really advocate very quickly for your child in a very sort of concise way. And hopefully that will help parents to feel empowered.
So is that the language that you use when you go in, maybe the way that you would assert yourself when you go in?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's say if I meet a parent who is very concerned about their child, sometimes it can take a while to actually get to the nub of the problem, because sometimes parents think, oh God, this is probably a silly question to ask. And there's no such thing as a silly question really when it comes to asking about your child, but parents might be a little bit shy or a bit hesitant to sort of say what's worrying them. And I guess in the book, I'm trying to say, look, it's fine to say whatever worries you, just say it. We're not here to judge, we're here to help. And I guess it just gives parents maybe a bit more of the language that we would use as doctors so that they can actually bring their concerns to us.
If any, that concern might help you identify something that you're unaware of when you look at the child.
Yeah, it can be the smallest thing parents can say, a throwaway comment, and suddenly you're going down a completely different avenue.
Did you have any reservations about sitting down to write a book? You know, people always say there's a book in everybody.
This was chiseled out of me.
Right.
Like it took.
How hard was it to chisel out?
Very. I had to be really disciplined, you know, and like I could be a bit scattered sometimes. So I just had to carve out time. It was actually, I did a lot of writing during the summer when the mornings were bright.
Okay.
And I'd wake up early, about 5 or 6 in the morning, and everybody else was still asleep, especially when the kids were on their summer holidays. And I'd just go downstairs and tappity tap, you know, write it. It's a slow process.
It's trying to balance everything. You know, you're working in a busy hospital in the Bon Secours in Cork, and naturally you want to have your downtime once you come out of the hospital. And in a way, it's almost like a busman's holiday, sitting down and, you know, writing about your job at the same time.
Yes, but I did enjoy it actually, because with Instagram and TikTok, like, you know, they could just disappear in the morning. They're intangible things. It's just data in a cloud. Whereas a book is something that you have in your hand. It's like a legacy. You know, my children can tell their kids that their granny wrote a book. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's a much more concrete thing. And in the age of AI, obviously, where you can get really bad information from things like ChatGPT and the Google AI box at the top, it's facts. So it sort of cuts through all the noise and gets to the facts.
That becomes quite the challenge, doesn't it? Because the internet naturally becomes almost like a first port of call when people want to check things. And they will now go directly to the AI summary. No longer is it even that Google gives you the top result, and that might be the Mayo Clinic or the HSE or the NHS, wherever it might be. They will give you an AI summary, and the AI summary could well be wrong.
It can be, and I've actually run a few experiments myself to see what they would do with certain bits of information that I give it, and it can be way off base. And like they'll draw their sources from things like Reddit and, you know, chat forums and stuff like that, which obviously are not, you know, peer-reviewed pieces of information.
It could be a parent's wrong experience which has found its way onto Reddit.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's you just have to be really, really careful with the AI part of it. If a parent Googles, and it's very, like I Google, you know, I mean, everybody does. It's very natural just to look at the first thing that comes up on the screen. And my advice would be to skip that and go down to your HSE or your NHS or your Mayo Clinic or whatever website, rather than taking the AI summary as gospel.
Yeah. And look, I presume at that stage as well, you would probably advise go see your GP or go see the hospital if it's serious. Don't take that something says on ChatGPT that's going to be fine. Just leave it.
Like ChatGPT can go two ways. It can really scare somebody, scare them so much that they go straight to hospital, or it can falsely reassure them. So it's just very important that if you're in that point where you're like, should I, shouldn't I, you know, do I need to see a doctor or don't I? If you're asking yourself that question, you probably do need to see a doctor, even if it's just to be reassured.
Yeah, because it's one of the things that you outline within the book as well. There are various circumstances where you should be going to a GP, circumstances where you should be going directly to hospital. And maybe even just as a reference for people who pick up the book, that's a useful thing to have.
Yeah, because sometimes there's so much panic in a situation. You know, if your child is really sick, you're going to be scared. And if you've read through the book already, you kind of have a framework in terms of what to do. But, you know, if things are really bad, like if your child is unresponsive or, you know, has had a seizure or isn't eating or drinking at all and is clearly dehydrated, then you're probably going to go straight to the emergency department. But at least you have your kit in terms of do I or don't I go to the GP or to the ED in that book. So you just have an extra little bit of a skill set, really, in terms of, you know, what to do in an emergency.
Before I let you go, how has it been received by your fellow doctors so far? I've got a chance to
read. Brilliant. Yeah, yeah. So I'm getting really nice feedback. I heard yesterday that it's like number one nonfiction bestseller, which is like an extra bonus. But my colleagues are kind of, I guess, grateful, you know, that somebody has put it out there. There are some other really good books on like child health, but I think this has a bit of a niche because it's me talking as a mum with a medical degree as opposed to me sort of being the austere, you know, doctor in the corner, you know. So I hope people can find it relatable.
Yeah, not in the ivory tower whatsoever. Niamh Lynch, many thanks for joining us. Should I Be Worried? A No Panic Guide to Your Child's Health is available now. Thanks a million, Niamh.
Thank you.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.